This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
I'm really happy to be here, and thank you so much for the efforts that you put in. Not just for this, but the ongoing energy of Slot, which is just an amazing, boggles my mind. And thank you, too, for helping turn a virtual space into a real space, because my only familiarity with Slot was actually through what was sometimes irritating email messages, irritating only because I was wading through 50 messages of spam before I got to it. I should also say that I don't come as an expert on Jarry, Joyce, William Anastasi, or anybody actually on this subject. Although I have written and actually done pataphysics. As I mentioned in the paper, I was one of the co-founders of the Canadian College of Pataphysics. Maybe that will be a future topic for Slot to look into. Let me start by confessing that the hubris of this paper, and it's a hubris that is it is tragicomic, I think, in its proclivities. I'm hoping that this is the start of a contribution of pushing history into the fourth dimension. I mean, this will be the artistic desire behind it. And it actually comes out of the momentum already started by Gilles Deleuze, and Deleuze was really the first contemporary philosopher to take Jarry seriously. He did his comparisons to Heidegger and seizing Jarry a precursor of Heidegger. Briefly, that the three areas that he sees is that both of them are moving towards a conquest of metaphysics. Both of them encounter the problematics of technology and art, and both of them are actually involved in a similar intervention into signification, in which they're working with collapsing a dead language into a living language. And what I did, I felt that was a complete project, was actually try to examine the laws of pataphysics, and one specific one here, which then allows me, I think, to present as a fact what seems like a fairly garish title right now, The Pataphysics of Auschwitz. For people who know pataphysics, please excuse the layman description of the terms, but I will move through that fairly quickly. So the topic of my paper might well, instead of offering, as does William Anastasi, a fecund investigation into the influence of Jarry on the ideas of Joyce and Duchamp, the paper attempts to open up some of the ramifications of Jarry's imaginary science of the exceptional with a destiny intimated in the title. Baudrillard invokes a millennial pataphysics for the contemporary epoch, an epoch characterized by the unreality of the real, the disappearance of history and the historical subject, and the emergence of a radical skepticism around the general reality of events. The topic of my paper might well touch on millennial history, but only by way of a detour back through a middle decade of the 20th century. The paper is also written against the broad background of a single interrogation that is spatial rather than definitional in its nature. Not what is pataphysics, but where is it? Where are its territorial emergences and historical interventions? The fact that I stand before you as a founding member of the Collegium Pataphysicum Canadensis, wow, that sounds good, grants no authority to what I'm about to say. And what I do say when I start to say it should be assessed, and quite brutally assessed, against Jarry's claim that everything is pataphysics. I'll need to remark a little later in the paper on the historical confluences at that time of its intervention, but let me here present Jarry's own succinct definition of the science of imaginary solutions and outline its two presidential laws. And this is a fairly long quote from Faustrom. Pataphysics, whose etymological spelling should be epi metataphusica, an actual orthography, comma, pataphysics, preceded by an apostrophe, so as to avoid a simple pun. The pun is pataphysique, or the foot, the paw, or the flare of physics. Pataphysics is the science of that which is superinduced upon metaphysics, within or beyond the latter's limitations, extending as far beyond metaphysics as the latter extends beyond physics. Explanation, an epiphenomenon being often accidental. Pataphysics will be, above all, the science of the particular, despite the common opinion that the only science is that of the general. Pataphysics will examine the laws which govern exceptions and will explain the universe supplementary to this one, or, less ambitiously, will describe a universe which can be, and perhaps should be, envisaged in the place of the traditional one, since the laws which are supposed to have been discovered in the traditional universe are also correlations of exceptions, albeit more frequent ones, but in any case, accidental data, which, reduced to the status of the unexceptional exceptions, process no longer even the virtue of originality. As the science of the particular, examining the laws which govern exceptions, pataphysics operates under the strict aegis of two appropriated laws, that of the clinamen and that of the syzygy. I don't know, Tom, if that's pronounced clinamen or clinamen. Would you know that for your Greek expertise? Well, being in America, I'll say clinamen, but it's probably wrong. It's something a little bit more euphoric. So it operates under these two appropriated laws of the clinamen and of the syzygy. Neither law is original. Indeed, what distinguishes the terms syzygy and clinamen from the term pataphysics is their obdurate non-neologistic origins. Both pertain to the broad relationships of matter to motion. The former is a mathematical term, while the latter derives from Lucretius's Roman redaction of classical Greek atomic theory. But let me deal with these two claims separately. Lucretius, and this is around about circa 40 BCE, Lucretius describes the atomic phenomenon of the clinamen in Book 2 of De Rerum Natura. So that the mind itself may not be subject to inner necessity in what it does, and fetch and carry like a captive slave, the tiny swerve of atoms plays its part at unanticipated times and places. The literary resurgence of this term is rare, but on its emergent moments are important. We find De Quincey overtly attributing to the term to Lucretius in his letter to a young man, and Coleridge speaks of a lene clinamen, the gentle bias in his Aids to Reflection. More recently, Harold Bloom invokes it as the first of his six revisionary ratios, and Michel Serres describes it as the minimal angle in a laminar flow that initiates a turbulence. The angle interrupts the stoic chain, breaks the federa fati, and the endless series of causes and relations. It disturbs, in fact, the laws of nature. For his part, Jean-Luc Nancy locates it at the core of both material creation and social multiplicity. And this is a quote from Nancy. One doesn't create a world with simple atoms. One needs a clinamen. One needs an inclination in both meanings of the word, of the one towards the other. The community is at least the clinamen of the individual. The clinamen then marks an atom's deviation from its path, its aberration from a stable flow, and its consequent collision to produce a new formation. Whereas science, that totality of the world's legends, as Serres so aptly puts it, would harness any deviance to the logical parameters of its own dyadic ontology, pataphysics, as the science of imaginary solutions, inscribes and articulates the moment, condition, and the very place where the law is insufficient to prevent the clinamen. The origin of the concept of atomic declension can be traced back beyond Lucretius to Greek Epicurean philosophy. A noteworthy fact for no other reason than it betrays the belatedness of Jarry's own science. Indeed, to all pre-microscopic cultures, the existence of the atom can only be hypothesized but never proved. It's hence the aspect of Epicureanism is patently an imaginary science. The syzygy is an astronomical use. In its astronomical use, the term refers to a conjunction or opposition of two planets in their orbit around a third. In biology, it denotes the conjunction of two organisms without the loss of identity. As a governing law of pataphysical methodology, it promotes those momentary oppositions and conjunctions in verbal meanings that always characterize the scientific discourse of imaginary solutions. Jarry's most famous contribution in this area is the semantic conjunction of space and time, of ether and eternity in eternity, to produce the semantic twin. A momentary conjunction in a logical space that carries along with it the cataclysmic breakdown of a coupled opposition. Together, the Clinemann and Syzygy ensure our universe to be pataphysical, a universe in which existence is shattered and constructed by means of the simultaneous agency of declensional and conjunctive forces. The role of the Clinemann has proven central amid the resurgence of interest in pataphysics, in the writings of Serre, Derrida, and Baudrillard, for instance. My own argument will focus on Jarry's second law of declension, the syzygy. If the Clinemann disturbs the laws of nature, the syzygy reinforces those laws pertaining to exceptions. For the syzygy effects an alliance of two anomalies. Moreover, the fusion and disappearance of opposition are brought about not by way of a concordat, but a sacrificial conjunction. Both the economy and outcomes of a syzygy are profoundly chiasmic, producing simultaneously a conjunction of opposites, affirmation and negation, truth and untruth, the possibility of the incompossible. It's by way of syzygy that Jarry's pataphysical theory of gravity obtains, in which the fall of a body towards a center is exactly the same as the ascension of a vacuum towards a periphery. Are we passing into night or retreating out of day? Is a question that expurgates the festive and lethal simultaneity of the pataphysical syzygy. Jarry himself describes a practical inducement of syzygia in the form of a mundane toilet brush he calls the physic stick, which in its pataphysical function serves as an efficient agent of revolution. Spinning around its axis induces an heraldic paralogy, for in each quarter of every one rotation, you form a cross with yourself. The situationists, the later happenings, and a broader poetics of bricolage that operates as a superinduced... Sorry, I've missed a page there, I think. This is a wonderful pataphysical moment where page 6 is missing. Shall I pause and find it or go on? I don't know. I wish I had a physics stick right now. One moment. Normally I'd start the paper right from the beginning again, but it's been a long day. So, take two. Okay. Spinning around its axis induces a heraldic paralogy, for in each quarter of every one rotation, you form a cross with yourself. It remains a moot point as to whether Jarry's physics stick inspired Duchamp's ready-made. However, it may be fruitful to rethink the objet trouvé through the paralogical kinetics of the syzygy. Does not the act of appropriating, renaming, and recontextualizing of a bottle rack or a snow shovel both effect an oppositional conjunction of art and utility, and at the same time effectively demolish the bar which separates equipment from the aesthetic object? Moreover, the rationale for the ready-made is inherent in the notorious postulate of pataphysical equivalence. There is thus no difference, and this is a quote from Jarry, there is thus no difference whatsoever, either of nature or degree, between different minds any more than there is any difference between their products, or indeed between one thing or another. For the complete pataphysician, the most banal graffito equals the most consummate book. Even the exploits and opinions of Dr. Faustrol themselves on the humblest mass production saucepans equals the nativity of Altdorfer. That's a quote from I.L. Sandomir. The syzygy, of course, enjoys an esteemed lineage. It's latent in Aristotle's claim that contraries, when set beside each other, make the strongest appearance, and that's in Rhetoric, Book 3. It reappears through history as the conjunctio oppositorum of Avicenna and the Concordia discourse that structures the majority of 17th century aesthetics. There's also a marked similarity between the syzygy and the Stoic conception of lived temporality as kairos. Kairos relates to syzygy not as its conceptual entimorph, but as a practical development out of the latter. Kairos remarks, and this is to quote Agamben, the abrupt and sudden conjunction where decision grasps opportunity and life is fulfilled in the moment. This would appear to endorse the spontaneous social assemblages of the situationists, the later happenings, and a broader poetics of bricolage that operates as a superinducement upon what is at hand. It is the syzygy, moreover, as a momentary conjunction of opposites that superinduces temporality and motion into the surreal image. And if you recall Paul Valéry's definition of the two disparate forms that come in, really what you get here is a momentary conjunction of opposites within it. There is the temporality. Through a pataphysical redaction, those famous definitions of the surreal image become slightly modified. It is now as beautiful as the chance and fleeting encounter on a dissection table of a sewing machine and an umbrella, as Lautréamont put it. It is now a momentary bringing together of two more or less distinct realities, as Révédi said. And yet again, the transitory joining of two apparent unjoinable realities, as Max Ernst defined it. Ever since the mind developed as a machine to think without fingers, pataphysics has been around as a renegade rationality, whose project has been the ludic anamorphization of truth, science, and their reactionary structures, regulatory ideals, and compromise formations. By all means, it's ludic, yet a strict tenet of imperturbability is fundamental to all pataphysical endeavors. Pataphysics is serious, for to effectively debunk the serious, it must itself be taken seriously. So neither parodic nor partaking of the logic of the absurd, pataphysics operates as a decidedly unofficial contaminant, generated within and as part of all or any scientific production. Installing itself within those rational endeavors of the syllogism, ratiocination, and truth production, it asserts its own status as an essential and part constitutional contaminant. Operating within the patriarchal terms, pataphysics eludes the power of both the scientific and the rational. It subverts their scope, problematizes the limits of their dominance, subjects them to a ludic pulverization that opens up the implications of their discourse and thereby relativizes their dispensations. The syzygy and Klinemann together strategize pataphysics' relation to the dominant space of logic. And by abolishing rational gaps and demarcations, suspending or ignoring the law of the excluded middle, by reversing the movement of syllogistic difference and integration, these two laws, operating as discursive tools, inaugurate conjunctive oppositions, laminations, and inclinations. Locating its main activity in the membranous space between scientific and artistic spheres, pataphysics continually resuscitates a rational impertinence, a fulguration against the cogito. Pataphysics does not describe an historical moment commencing with the birth of Alfred Jarry, but it rather marks a transhistoric state of mind. The covering law of pataphysics is totality. Everything is pataphysics, either conscious or unconscious, and the choreography is incline, for the pataphysical is the Klinemann of the scientific. Let me at this point revisit Jarry's definition, and this is the hinge in the paper. So to repeat a part of his definition, pataphysics will be above all the science of the particular, despite the common opinion that the only science is that of the general. pataphysics will examine the laws which govern exceptions. Agamben claims that Auschwitz marks the end and the ruin of every ethics of dignity and conformity to a norm. But does this make it pataphysical? National socialism, like pataphysics, is less the repudiation than the culmination of a project called reason. Both encounter the condition of the exception, and both respond with solutions. The one imaginary, the other final. It is surely coincidental in the specific form of coincidence that is syzygy, that Jarry's science, launched in a novel and a cycle of plays, emerge at the same historical period as the concentration camp, whose origin remains contested in the late 19th century between British and Spanish imperialisms, and whose prevalent employment dates from World War I. To argue a causal link between pataphysics and the camp would be laughingly impertinent. But the rule of chance, of l'accidence, allows this conjunction of opposites to settle in a world whose very essence and cultural memory is, to say the least and the most, pataphysical. In Homo Sacer, Agamben examines the juridico-political structure that made and makes an Auschwitz possible. Not born of orthodox law, the camps emerge from the substitution of martial law to cover a state deemed to be an exception. We find protective custody and the protection of private freedom both to be Prussian legal implementations at the beginning of the 1850s, and the measures designed to meet a state of emergency and such a degree of social and unrest as to be declared a state of exception. The novelty within the Nazi resuscitation of this already trenchant institution within the governments of the Weimar takes the form of a subtly nuanced rewording of the German constitution. No mention is made of a state of exception, and the previously provisional suspension of the constitutional articles protecting personal rights is now rendered suspended until further notice. Agamben notes the chilling consequences. Quote, "The state of exception thus ceases to be referred to as an external and provisional state of factual danger and comes to be confused with the juridical rule itself." One Nazi jurist, Werner Spohr, called the new state of imminent exception as a state of willed exception, an aptly paradoxical phrase that equally describes the atomic kliniman. The camp, avers Agamben, is the space that is opened when the state of exception begins to become the rule. What's excluded in the camp is, according to the etymological sense of the term, exception excapere, taken outside, included through its own inclusion. But what is first of all taken into the juridical order is the state of exception itself. Insofar as the state of exception is willed, it inaugurates a new juridico-political paradigm in which the norm becomes distinguishable from the exception. As a superinducement of pataphysics into the space of the camp, this remarks both the culmination and the inversion of a pataphysical dimension. The law that governs the exception disappears precisely because a state of exceptions becomes the law outside the law. Agamben offers a sober analysis of the syzygial, even postmodern nature of life in the camp as a complex conjunction of opposites. To quote Sir Agamben again, "Whoever entered the camp moved in a zone of indistinction between outside and inside, exception and rule, licit and illicit, in which the very concepts of subjective right and juridical protection no longer make any sense." Sandomir, the pataphysician, assures us the world is one great aberrance, which additionally, universally, is based upon an infinity of other aberrations. And Jarry left pataphysics behind in his novel The Supermale to pursue the open vista of the possibilities beyond being. Yet the dimensions and dilations of the pataphysical still remain, And this talk didn't seek to explain a Nazi final solution via the science of imaginary solutions. Yet it did attempt to expose a pataphysical dimension within a part of its practical execution. And if Argemann's postulate that the camp is central to the project of biopolitics, indeed that the camp is the new biopolitical nomos of the planet, then this talk could have been titled The Pataphysics of Guantanamo Bay. And certainly pataphysics will not be over. Its mission and accomplishment and its desires are still not fulfilled. So that's it. Thank you.
One is the way that I try to outline the thing, which is the French, one works on particular issues and one does not go through party rhetoric to make institutions. So there's a problem, and we bring it up. And something that's blatantly absent. I mean, if one looks at the dismal current situation, and let's just look at statistics, is that we're having maybe, I think the statistics are the last few, 2,000 people a year in the world are killed by acts of terrorism. There are 5 million starving children who die. You know, whether it's a child dying every 5 seconds. People dying in Asians. And this suddenly, these become secondary and social issues. And that's because it's passed through party, it's passed through, we've got a politics that's on its own genders, and a self-perpetuation of that. So I think that kind of physical politics will go down. One example, actually, I think going down to the sharp spooky area, I think, is a antecedent. And Fourier, too, I think, is a wonderful invention of culinary warfare. It's a phrase from martial warfare. We will have a little assembly in the middle of the bush. And we'll both cook as a meal. And every meal is most enjoyable and very wonderful. I think that would be.
Yes. This may be completely divergent or off base, but in the previous comment you made about the sort of prioritization of these problems, through your talk, I kept hearing sort of echoes of pragmatism, sort of Jamesian or even Georgian pragmatism, as being very closely alive or having a lot of affinities with the essence of physics.
I've only seen myself, my trajectory into metaphysics actually became as an artist and poet. And actually, in trying to localize that with the world of Canada, what we created there is going to be this part of the genetics. I really don't see that there, not so much. I don't want to be a damn on the but my interest is actually quite benign in the sense that that simple, almost like young question, anything is metaphysics, to test that against what we on surface